So you'll find you've got Matthew 24:3 and then 36-5:1. As Jesus was sitting on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately. "Tell us," they said, "when will this happen? And what will be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" "No one knows about that day or hour, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father. As it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. From the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That is how it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding with a hand at the mill, one will be taken, the other left. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have let his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master's staying away a long time, and he then begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, and at an hour he's not aware of. He will cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. I don't know if you're aware, but the world will end in the year 2032. According to Ukrainian astrologists, astronomers, that's what I mean, isn't it? I knew I got that wrong in my head. I said, you know, you say something out loud, you think that's not wrong, is it? According to Ukrainian astronomers, so last October, that was their prediction, they'd spotted an asteroid heading towards the Earth, I don't know how you spot it, but that sort of distance, and it's going to hit 2032. Now, what do you do with information like that? The world will end in 2032. Well, it probably changes how you start up your pension plans and those sort of things. You may blow the pot, as George Osborne once, don't go there. But what would you do? Well, what NASA did was have a look, of course. You have a look at the evidence for such a thing. And they said, no, it's fine, don't worry. 99.9% certain we are it's going to miss. So that's okay, just don't let the little thing niggle you. But they're pretty confident that's all fine. I know that the world's going to end. We all know that. Everyone agrees upon that. But when? It's probably billions of years in the future, so let's not worry. I guess that's the approach. But alarmist predictions come and go. So I read a couple of weeks ago Stephen Hawking being interviewed. And his great fear for the future was that the end would come for humanity when computers become so advanced they kill us all off. Yeah, you've been watching some films, haven't you, Stephen? I've seen that plot line before. I've seen the Terminator 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, the and the Matrix, that sort of thing. But apparently, he says, artificial intelligence is gathering force so very quickly, that before long, unless, and this is his desire, that humans genetically engineer themselves, if this sort of symbiotic relationship with computers will get overtaken and they'll wipe us out. And you think, okay, you're a genius with math. But that one, who can tell? Now look, everyone says the world's going to end in some way, be it that, be it a big virus that takes us all out. Because the biblical claim, Jesus says, it'll end when he returns. And no one knows when that is. So whenever someone makes a prediction, laugh. Jesus says, no one knows where it is. That's the big headline over this passage. The disciples come to him, Jesus, when's the end of the world? Verse 36. No one knows about that day or hour. Not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only God the Father. No one knows. Now this is Jesus' last little block of teaching in Matthew's Gospel. Lots of teaching he's been doing. But chapters 24 and 25 is one last talk sermon. not publicly, to his disciples. So the very last thing really he wants to impress upon the disciples before he goes to his death is, I will return. You've got to be ready for that. But don't predict it. That's what's going on. What you get, and that's really the, from now to chapters 24 and 25, but what you get in this passage is, how would you put it, a description of his return. Don't date it, but a description, and then two little stories he tells to drive home these two implications. So there's a description, it's going to be unexpected and divisive, and two stories then. Be ready, be faithful. So let's just look at this briefly. Jesus says then, his return, it'll come. The end of the world will come, everyone says so, but it'll come when he comes back. And it will be unexpected and divisive. So verse 37, it's unexpected. I'm so sorry, this is so small today. It's terrible, isn't it? It's my eyes. So mixed response to that. Verse 37, as it was in the days of Noah, so it will be at the coming of the Son of Man. For in the days before the flood, people were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, up to the day Noah entered the ark. And they knew nothing about what would happen until the flood came and took them all away. That's how it'll be at the coming of the Son of Man. It will be unexpected. So Jesus will return at party time. It is not, as sometimes people will suggest, that the world will get to such a horrific state of wickedness that Jesus returns. No, he returns when there's just indifference. Secular indifference, I guess, a nonchalance towards him. That's what's being described. So, eating, drinking, marrying, giving in marriage. Now, of course, there is nothing wrong with any of those things. Those are all very good things. You see Jesus doing all of those things, going to weddings and feasting and drinking and making wine so they can have more drink. Nothing wrong with any of those things. But doing them with no reference to him, with no awareness that one day he will return and we will have to give an account for our lives. That's the problem. Doing all these things, great. Doing them knowing that he's coming back with reference to him, honouring him, great. Ignoring him, never expecting him, that is the problem, he says. I don't know if you saw the film, I think it was 2 years ago it came out, Ewan McGregor, that doesn't narrow it down, doesn't mean half the films, but Ewan McGregor, Naomi Watts, The Impossible was the film. And it was a dramatisation of the events of 2004 of the tsunami out in Thailand in that part of the world. So it's a true story, dramatised. So the couple, Ewan McGregor, Naomi Watts, they went on holiday with their three children over the Christmas period. And they arrive in this sort of idyllic location. There's some confusion over their booking. They get an upgrade to an even nicer sort of chalet right on the beach. Beautiful. And you see them exchanging their gifts on Christmas Day, and they let off all these Chinese lanterns with, you know, about 1,000 people. Oh, it's all very beautiful. And they're sipping their wine and they're eating their magnificent food. But of course, as the viewer, you know, it's not what the film's about. So it gets to Boxing Day and the family are in the pool. And of course they see that there's a distant noise, becomes a very real rumbling thunder. And then of course there's just the horror of that wave crashing down upon them all. And you watch this thing, because you get involved in it as you do in a good film. And you sort of sense the horror of the family, but actually what's kind of more unsettling as the viewer, you see the beauty, the feasting, the drinking, the stunning location, but you know what's coming. And so there's sort of discordant, you're watching all these things going, the family's going to get, And they didn't know. Of course, none of those people in 2004 knew. Just going about their life, and life was good. But, all of a sudden, so Jesus warns his disciples that the world will carry on partying. No, join in with them. But remember, that's not all there is. He is coming back. It's unexpected, but also divisive, verses 40 and 41. Verse 42, men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding with a handmill, one will be taken, the other left. Jesus, the language of being taken is used earlier in the chapter, verse 31. When he comes back, he will take his people to be with him.
Now, this would be slightly shocking, wouldn't it, if you're there, I mean, probably not grinding corn or working out in the field, but there you are at your desk and you're, you know, chatting away and, you know, there's a big rumble in the sky and, you know, it's very dramatic here. Albert, what's going on over there, do you reckon, Albert? 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 Where's Albert's gone? And half the office has gone. That would be slightly you know, if you call yourself a Christian, you'd be pretty disappointed at that point. But, you know, that's sort of, wow, some people will be go to be with Jesus, others will not. They're abandoned, left. It's divisive, says Jesus, between those who have put their faith in him and those who have not. Now, let's be honest, that is a rarely a popular comment to make. That there'll be a division. Most people do think that along some senses. Apparently, according to the last poll done in the UK, 70% believe in some form of afterlife, be it some eternal soul or, I mean, it's pretty woolly or vague what people think, but 70% still think there's something after this life. And people think there's a division. Not everyone goes to the same place. So I guess if you ask average man in the street, woman in the street, run with me, there's a heaven. Okay, I'll run with you on that one. Do you think everyone will be there? Oh, no, I don't think everyone will be there. Well, who will be there? Well, nice people will be there, who have lived good lives, and nasty people will not. Immoral people will not be there. Okay. Where are you going to draw a line on that one? I mean, I'll be honest with you, I sometimes get angry. Occasionally I'm selfish. I'm inconsistent. I have a certain standard how I live, try to live my life, and sometimes I fall short of it. Just to be honest. Well, you do as well, occasionally. So I'm a moral failure. So am I bad? Oh, no. Maybe wouldn't put it quite that, but okay, let's have a sort of swing. Almost from the thing of Jesus over here, and I don't know, Stalin over here. Where do you put the line? Well, yeah, there. Yeah, that sort of thing, and I'm here, and nasty people are there. Okay, so there's a division. Good people, bad people. I'm a Christian. I think Jesus says there'll be a division, but it's done differently. It's not good people are accepted, bad people are not. It's if you trust him, you're accepted. If you reject him, you're not. Oh, I don't like that. It's just, I'm drawing the line differently, but it's no different to you. You could even say, I think Jesus' way is a better way, a more inclusive way. If you live a bad life for 70, 80 years, you've got no time to make up the difference and be good enough now. But following Jesus, you can reject him all your life, but at the last minute say, oh, I want to follow him. In one sense, it's a more exclusive entrance into heaven. By anyone who thinks there's an afterlife draws a line somewhere. Jesus says, it's not good people, bad people. Good in, bad out. It's those who trust me in, those who ignore me out. It's never too late to believe in him, though, he says. So look, when Jesus will return, it's unexpected and divisive. So let me tell you two stories, he says, to make that point very clear. First then, be ready, verses 42 to 44. Therefore, given that that's the case, knowing that I'm coming back, therefore, keep watch. Because you do not know on what day your Lord will come. But understand this, if the owner of the house had known at what time of night the thief was coming, he would have kept watch and would not have left his house be broken into. So you also must be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Keep watch. Run with that parable for a moment. Imagine with your ear to the ground on the criminal network of your neighbourhood, you are told that tomorrow night your house is targeted for burglary. What would you do? That would affect your decision making, I suggest. You would go out and, I don't know, if multiple people in the house, you'd maybe do it shifts. You know, you sleep, you know, I'll stay awake for 4 hours, then you take the middle shift, and then, you know, you'd keep someone awake. You might go out and get a big dog, or one of those things that sounds like a dog when someone pushes the doorbell, or it comes anywhere near. You might invest in a super duper laser burglar alarm, connected to a police station, but you do something. In parts of the country, you go and buy a shotgun and, you know, get ready for action. But you do something if you were told that. What you wouldn't do is say, oh, I've been bogged and I'll go on holiday then. I'll go on holiday. Oh, I don't want to be disturbed by that. I'll take a sleeping tablet just so I don't get woken up, because I hate being woken up in the middle of the night. It's just annoying. You wouldn't do that. But the obvious thing is, it would change how you went to bed that night. And that's Jesus' comment here. Order your life with the knowledge that he's coming back. I guess it throws up the question. What would you do differently if, and we don't, but if you knew that Jesus was coming back on Christmas Day this year? What is it? 78? No, that's shopping days. Anyway, in about 80 odd days' time. What would you do differently? No, he's not. Well, we're not told. Can't say that for certain. But it would change things, wouldn't it? You think, right, they've got, whatever it is, 85 days left until, slightly reorientate your priorities, wouldn't it? One or two things you might get off your chest to your boss or that client. You know, I've been sort of slightly sycophantic for a while. Well, I don't care anymore. You know, it would change a few things, wouldn't it? No, don't just stay with me. Don't daydream at all those conversations you'd love to have with the bank manager and so forth. But it would change things. And that's Jesus' point. It's got to change how you live, knowing he's returning. You're not indifferent. You don't ignore that fact. You make certain plans. No one knows when. But that he is returning, that's got to change something. So be ready, is the point of that little story. And then this last one, a strange one. Be faithful, verses 45 to the end. So another little story. Who then is the faithful and wise servant, whom the master has put in charge of the servants in his household to give them their food at the proper time? It will be good for that servant, whose master finds him doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth. He will put him in charge of all his possessions. Positive. Now the angle to this story, I guess, is that watching for Jesus' return is not sat in a deck chair with the binoculars watching. It's living. It's fulfilling your obligations that you have. It's discharging your duties. In this story, two characters. There's a master, who represents Jesus, and one servant. At first he does it right, and then he does it badly. Okay? Master, one servant. So in verses 45 to 7, he's a faithful servant. He relates to others kindly, faithfully, and he's rewarded. That's a very common theme there in Jesus' teaching. It's very striking, is it? Verse 47, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. I don't know what that means. I don't know if we can push the details too far, but Jesus is saying, if you follow him faithfully in this life, you get rewarded. And part of that reward is, well, it's responsibility. Often Jesus puts it in those terms. Later on in chapter 25, well done, good and faithful servant, and, you know, join your master's happiness and you get more responsibilities. Had it in chapter 19 as well. It's often, you could even say, it's one of Jesus' most common pictures of being rewarded in heaven. Now, if you're anything like me, and I know I am, when you think of more responsibility, that ebbs and flows, whether that sounds like a nice thing. Jesus says, oh, well done, I'll reward you with more responsibility. Yeah, I feel I have enough, actually. Between work and this person, and my family at the moment, and my parents who are sick, and you know, and look at, it's quite a lot of responsibility. I'm not sure I want any more. But sometimes, of course, it's good. And of course, it's meant to be a positive thing. And there are those times when we're given responsibility and step up and fulfill something, and it's very satisfying. And I guess that's what Jesus is talking of. A few months ago, I went to Diggerland. Anyone been to Diggerland? It is a theme park composed of nothing but JCB diggers. That is what it is. And some of them are, you get in them and they spin them, they spin you as fast as you possibly can. Others you sort of just go up and down relentlessly on an extendable thing. The whole theme park is big. I didn't go on my own, I went with my son. Can I just be very clear on that? It was for his sake, he was keen to go. However, one of the things you get to do, there's this big old rugged terrain, and you get to sit in the, I think I'm right, the 52-ton, massive, the biggest thing that JCB make. You know, it looks like something that Hollywood, dropped off a Hollywood set. It's enormous, and the cabin seats, you know, about half a dozen people, it's that big. And it's worth, you know, £2.5 million or something, this bit of kit. And the bloke's in there, and he's sort of driving it over this track, and he's like, whoa, so, you know, bumping around. And then he says, "You'll go." You're joking. Seriously, this thing's worth how much? Well, about £2.5 million. You can't let me drive this on the... I'll roll it. I mean, this is probably quite an expensive thing to roll, isn't it? Oh, God, have a go. You know, all right. And you're like, you know, you give some... And a bit of those sort of noises. But after a while, oh, okay, I've got this thing. Got power steering. You feel very manly. Moving this thing around. And for 5 minutes, you drive this 52-ton thing around, you think, I'm the man. I have stepped up to this responsibility, and actually it's very satisfying. And now I can tell others I've driven a 52-ton JCB. I have my license, this is a comedy thing you get given, to drive such a thing. Now when you're given responsibility and you fulfill it in that sort of way, it is a great delight. And I guess that's Jesus' point. The faithful servant, well, he's rewarded, but, verse 48, but suppose that servant, it's the same guy, suppose that servant is wicked and says to himself, my master is staying away a long time, and then he begins to beat his fellow servants and to eat and drink with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on a day when he doesn't expect him. And at an hour he's not aware of. The same guy. Now what the servant doesn't do, he's not denying the end of the world. He's not denying that Jesus will come back, this servant. He just says, oh, it's so far away. He's taking so long. Yeah, I think that Jesus is coming back. I think the master's returning. But it has absolutely no relevance to my life now. Because right now I've got a lot of important things to do, and that is then. When it gets nearer that point, then I'll get around to it. He just pushes it off into the distance. A distant hope produces in this man a delinquent life. It goes wrong. Hope is deferred, hope is distant, and it produces a delinquent life. By contrast, earlier, a present hope, I know Jesus is coming back, a faithful life. That's the. If you think that hope is just distant and unreal, oh, it won't affect you here and now. If you know, if you think, no, I know Jesus is coming back, that's very real to me, you live faithfully now. That's the point Jesus is making. Now, verses 50-51, well, they seem pretty harsh, don't they? Verse 50, the master of that servant will come on a day when he doesn't expect him. At an hour he's not aware of, he'll cut him to pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites, where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Common language that Jesus uses, actually, 6 times in Matthew's Gospel, weeping and gnashing of teeth. That's his language for being rejected, for being shut out of heaven, for hell, if you want to use that term. Seems harsh. Of course, Jesus is giving his disciples a warning out of kindness. It was a few months ago now, I guess, 3-4 months ago. I was cycling along late one night. I think it was about 10 o'clock leaving work and cycling back home up through Parliament and over Westminster Bridge. And I went through a light and it was amber-ish, maybe nudging red-ish. But anyway, I went through a light, but God, it's so late at night, who would have noticed? Well, the policeman noticed on his motorbike, and he didn't make a great fuss, but, you know, I'm quite nippy on my bike, but, you know, not that nippy, and this thing drew alongside me, woo, just a very gentle, not aggressive, and, he was very calm, but all he said to me was, last week, I had to visit a home. He was a 42-year-old man, and I had to say to his wife and two children that their father had died on a bicycle going through a red light. I hate that part of my job. Don't make me do it again. Have a good night. Off you went. I felt about 3 years old. You know, yes, officer. Yes, officer. Yeah, I was completely silent. Now, what's he doing there? Is he scaring me? Yeah. Yeah. He's saying, look, let me tell you how life is. I'm not guaranteeing, but sometimes people go through red lights and they die and they leave their families behind. Don't do that. I'm a little more cautious since then. A little more obedient. Sobers you up a bit. The officer, he spoke firmly but gently. His conscience was clear and it did me much good. And Jesus is saying here, much the same. Jesus, you're trying to scare me. No, I'm just trying to warn you. There's reality to life. But none of us like this language, sort of weeping and gnashing of teeth, cut off for a place with the hypocrites. But one thing it does do, though, it does help us understand a little bit more clearly what Jesus then went through three chapters later, as he dies upon the cross. He is cut off from his Father, who he'd known eternally. To be cut off, well, it kind of matters, or it doesn't. If a boss that you don't really like cuts, if a client you don't really get on with cuts you off, you think, well, fair enough, I don't really mind. If a client you do lots of good business with, he's good revenue, and actually, you kind of got to know him and think of him as a friend. If he cuts you off, well, that's annoying, that's awkward, it's actually painful. If your family cuts you off, your wife, your sibling, your children, your parents, that's very awful. For Jesus to be cut off from his Father, who he'd known from eternity, that's very painful. And when Jesus dies upon the cross, he's cut off. He's assigned a place with the hypocrites. He knew weeping and gnashing of teeth, not the physical pain. Horrific as that was, that's superficial compared to what he endured mentally, spiritually, at that moment. And so Jesus says, I need you to understand that. When I offer to die for you, what I offered to experience the weeping and gnashing of teeth, it wasn't a small thing, it was a big thing. So Jesus says, there's an unexpected division coming. Are you ready? Have you put your faith in Jesus Christ that he will pay that for you? And for those of us who are Christians, are you faithfully living that way? Are you orientating your life with the knowledge that he's coming back? Because he will come back. And he says to us, keep watch. Keep watch for that day. Let me do this in a prayer. Father, thank you that the Lord Jesus is a faithful and true teacher. He's honest. He never tried to trick people into following him by saying how easy and superficial it would be and everything would go well. But he gave clear warnings that rejecting him into eternity would be terrible. But also he makes the offer that he is willing to take punishment for us. Would we be those who expect his return? Prepare for his return by trusting him, we ask, in his name. Amen. Amen.